Welcome back to the Inside Show podcast, episode 418. That joke is getting old.
Right?
I mean, we're going to retire the joke.
What's that?
We're going to keep making it, but it's getting
tiresome. We can retire that joke whenever you want.
No. No, that's our in solidarity of staying inside thing. I'm sticking with it. But it is tiresome, just like the world being on hold. What's going on? How are you? How was your 2 weeks?
It's fine. You know, stayed inside a lot. Been going out a little more. We had a social distance visit with a couple friends last weekend. It was literally me and one of her friends, like, sitting outside. We sat 6 feet apart. We had a drink. It was a beautiful night. It was actually, like, cold that night. She was with one of her girlfriends. Same thing. It was nice and not as awkward as we thought it would be. But otherwise, it's been more the same. I almost mm-hmm. feel like I am Stockholm syndromed with my apartment now. Like, I'm kind of a little too okay with the, oh, I don't have anywhere to go, movie. Like, it doesn't bother me, and I feel like it should more. But at the same time, it's nice that it doesn't, because then I don't feel like, oh my god, I need to get out of here.
I feel like I said this when this all first started, because of how remote I normally am and the lack of interaction I have with people and not really seeing much of a change. There's a huge part of me that is, like, A-okay with this.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm not exactly the biggest of social butterflies out there anyways, so you're like, well, now I have an excuse to stay home and sit on my couch.
Well, and that's the funny thing, because not too long before this, Mallory and I were like, we need a weekend to ourselves. We need to, like, not go out. We not have plans. And I'm like, all right, I guess be careful what you wish for. Like,
right, yeah.
A friend of ours set up a barbecue hangout, like, middle of next month. And their pool is going to be open, and we're like, you know, we'll probably be fine going, but we're going to wear masks. And
yeah, you should.
I know we should. And there's a couple of my friends, one in particular I'm thinking of, who I know hasn't been, and he shared on social media not that long ago. He was down in Asbury Park with a couple other people having drinks with no masks, no distancing, no nothing. I'm like, aside from the legality of it all at this point, like, I get that's your choice, but it's the wrong choice, and, like, mm-hmm. that's the what's going to be the problem. So, like, I just gotta put it out there on, like, the Facebook invite. Like, look, we're gonna come, but we're gonna wear a mask and try to distance as much as possible. Like, we're putting this out here. The mentality is, like, I don't want to talk about this while I'm there.
Right.
If you think I'm being an idiot, I think you're being an idiot. So let's just understand that and move on from it and enjoy hanging out with each other.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. We are attempting to do our first band practice since, I might be since February.
Oh, wow.
Maybe first week in March, but that was, like, ski season. So we may have missed a couple in early March, in which case it's been since February. I can't even remember at this point, but it's going to be an outside, socially distanced, acoustic thing, because it's, you know, at 8 o'clock at night is generally when we practice, so we don't want to be annoying to neighbors and whatnot. So it's going to be, like, an outdoor acoustic jam sesh from a distance, and that's, like, the only way that we can all agree to be in the same space and do it. So it'll be very interesting to see how that goes. But that'll be tomorrow. It'll be good to actually see other people and play music again, because it's been a very long time. So,
yeah,
curious to see how that goes.
You guys need to record that, like, a cameras. It, like,
maybe the next time we do it, but we haven't played music together in so long. I don't want any record.
I just want a video of, like, how you're setting this up and everyone yelling across the way from each other at things. Yeah. Like, I know you're going to be a little hesitant as to how you sound, but
right. I mean, if we set up on the loading dock at the shop, like, that's a pretty big space. We can all spread out pretty easily on that and not have it be a problem. So we'll probably do something along those lines. I don't really know. We're going to figure it out.
You'll have to update us next time.
To why we're here tonight. We've got three new releases and a new black label pick for you this week. Two of the albums we're covering are repeat listens for us, and then a new one that is a band that has been around a long time, but that we're just now checking out, kind of a little late to the party. First on that list, as should be no surprise, is the 8th and self-titled album, Lamb of God, from Lamb of God, out on Epic Records. Obviously, we were going to cover this one.
Yeah.
I don't know where to start on it. Maybe the most obvious part is this is their first album without Chris Adler. He was replaced by Art Cruz, who is from Winds of Plague and Prong. And that is the biggest difference of this album, is you lose some of the technicality in favor of groove. And that's not a bad thing, because Lamb of God has, you know, often been lumped into the groove category.
Well, I mean, there's historically been a good amount of groove on their albums.
Right, right. And I would say it is more evident now due to the drumming style. Because, like, if you're paying attention to the vocal patterns and the guitar riffs and whatnot, they're not drastically different from what this band has been forever before that.
Right.
But there is definitely a little bit of a different feel to this album. So I can really only attribute that to the drums. Maybe part of that is the drums don't sound like shit for the first time ever.
Yeah.
Which is, I didn't think I could have been convinced that I liked Chris Adler's tone, but having it be like a well-produced drum sound and a snare drum that doesn't sound like a Campbell soup can was definitely weird.
But not in a bad way.
No, but I don't know. We've been like so Stockholm syndrome to you know, borrow your phrase from earlier, to like, well, this is the Lamb of God sound, that to have like, oh, this is a good sounding snare drum is jarring and took a while to kind of get into for me. I don't know. Maybe it's because it always felt like a little underproduced, and like that was kind of some of the rawness that you got from Lamb of God, to have it be like, this is like about as polished as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
Felt a little weird.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a minor note one way or another. What you get for the majority of this, I mean, this is, other than that one member, it's been the same core group of dudes since they transitioned from Burn the Priest to Lamb of God. They're 8 albums deep. They're not reinventing the wheel here.
Yeah.
It's a solid album. It's not a big, you know, turning point or touchstone or landmark for them at all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay. There's a few standout songs, but there's nothing on it that really grabbed me as like an oh my god moment from this. I would chalk it up to a decently average Lamb of God release.
So if anybody's read Heavy Blog is Heavy's review of,
I have not,
this, my sentiments of this album echo that review to a T. So okay, actually, when it comes to Art Cruz, I don't feel it, production aside, I don't feel it's that much different than if Adler was there. As this, the review puts it, Cruz does a perfectly serviceable imitation of him that, although it reinforces Lamb of God's unwillingness to really shake things up, also goes to show that while technically proficient, Adler's style never really boasted that much personality either. And I think, for better or worse, Cruz works as a actual replacement for Adler on this album, as opposed to being a new member of the band and bringing something fresh. So while you mentioned the groove and stuff, I feel that really harks back more to some of the Sacrament stylings, and especially certain tracks throughout their career. It's definitely echoed more here. There's a little more of a hardcore tone, which you get back from Ashes of the Wake, some songs from there. The album is consistent, maybe more consistent even than, album number 7, Sturm und Drang. So while that experimented more and more, I applauded it and I still really enjoy it, the consistency here actually reminds me a little more of On Earth. And that's kind of where Lamb of God is. Like I said, they're 8 albums deep. It's been 20 years. Like, they're going to sound like Lamb of God. On Earth is going to sound like On Earth. And guess what? They tried to change it up a little bit on their last album, and it was met with mixed reviews. I feel like if Lamb of God was to make too big of a change, you're going to hear about it too. But that said, there's not a huge amount that stands out, but I think the second half of the album is better than the first, starting with Resurrection Man, which we're going to play. this was something else mentioned in the Heavy Blog review, is the sequencing. That Memento Mori is a fine opening track, and while it's a single through and through, it's going to kill live. Like, it's got tons of energy, it hits the breakdowns in the right spots, and but, like, Resurrection Man would have also been a nice start to just get in and get to the point, and just mixing it up more. Like, I feel like you have a really strong streak going through the latter half of the album, which you kind of have to get through the first half. But if you're a Lamb of God fan, there's nothing here you're going to dislike. Interestingly, my brother-in-law, who's a huge Lamb of God fan, has a lyric tattooed on him, had told me before the album came out, he was kind of like, meh, like over it, like wasn't super interested based on the singles. And I shared the Heavy Blog review and was like, well, hopefully it turns out differently than what we think. And I haven't gotten to talk to him since the album came out, what, yesterday? What's today?
Yesterday.
Yeah. But I was more impressed with the album than what I was thought I was going to get, I should say, in the end. And I can see myself going back to this more, maybe because of its consistency and how hard it hits. I mean, Randy is, he's on fire. He's got his vitriolic presentation. The lyrics are very apt for the times, as you'd expect from Lamb of God, and especially from Randy himself. You got a couple good guest stars, which is funny. We're talking about Josta guesting on Poison Dream, and with the song right before it being even a little more hardcore sounding than Poison Dream is, though they haven't come in during the breakdown-y part. But Josta's voice is tired. Like, yeah, I love Hatebreed, but I think I said this when I reviewed their last time I saw them live, is that that was my least favorite time seeing them because Josta was tired. And what's really funny about that is, for those who may have read this a long time ago, was he was supposed to get vocal training from Melissa Cross, who Randy got vocal training from, and a lot of others in this scene did. And they went to her because Josta recommended her, but he never ended up going. So now,
interesting,
years later, we find his voice is fucking shot, and Randy sounds just as good, if not better, than he did on earlier albums. So, hey, it worked, and oops. That said, when the two of them are yelling at the same time, they kind of pair together well, and it does add a contrast to Randy. But, and, you know, Roots with Chuck Billy sounds like a Testament tribute song.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot thrashier than what you typically get from Lamb of God.
Right.
But, like, to me, that worked well.
Absolutely.
Because it felt different from a lot of what the rest of the album was, you know, because they weren't breaking a lot of new ground. To have something that's like, this is a thrash song, period, was, like, fun.
Right, exactly. And I totally agree with that. And I would think they listened to their playback and like, hey, we need Chuck on this because it sounds like something that he would have been on, you know? Like, it works really well. And On the Hook is a great closer, probably one of the better songs on the album, actually. And I enjoyed this. You're probably going to give it a 3, I'm guessing?
I am. And I have a couple, like, counterpoints to make to some of the things you said. So I'll weigh in on that after you go ahead and give a number for it.
I'm going to give a 4 because I want that 3.5 that I'm not allowed to give on my own.
Yeah, damn right. So the only 2 notes I want to touch on from what you're talking about is, I disagree with the Heavy Blog thing there on the drumming, in that, like, if you go back and listen to maybe, like, some of the mid-era or later-era stuff wasn't quite as inventive, but if you go back and listen to anything on, you know, Palaces or Ashes, like, that drumming is so much more interesting. There was no one doing that type of shit back then. You know, he was a really, really inventive, creative drummer. Like, the bass drum patterns in particular that he worked with were, like, they defined a generation of what people are playing on bass now. It used to just be like, you know, double bass was for rolling double bass or, you know, playing as fast as you can. And he was, like, mimicking the guitar riffs and doing, like, all kinds of weird off-kilter shit. And then just, like, the fluidity with which he rolled on the toms and his use of cymbal accents and, like, a billion different cymbals was extremely different than what you get with this album. It's very just, like, here's drums. Yeah, they're proficient, but they don't bring anything fun or new to the table. Whereas Adler definitely was creative, and this more feels like we need somebody that can play fast and play a tight double bass and is a good drummer, but is not like a playing the drums like you're writing a riff. It's playing the drums to serve the song.
Right.
And I liked the way that Adler pushed the writing and the songs. And I don't feel like Cruz is doing that. My only other critique is of the vocals. They're fine. The delivery is great. I've always liked his voice. Mm-hmm. But this has the same effect on me that Wrath had, by and large. Nope. That's not the album. Sacrament had, by and large, with, you know, the Redneck single just being like so on the fucking nose and like dumbed down and sophomoric that like the fact that you can understand every word Randy yells at you sort of hurts sometimes because of how just like lack of metaphor, lack of whatever. It's just like, yep, here we go. This is the lyrics. I don't know. It always bothers me a little bit, but something like, you know, number 7, I'm not going to try to, you know, try to pronounce that properly. You know, that one being told of the story of him being imprisoned and having like that bigger scope and story behind it versus like, hey, politics in America are fucked and our president's a racist. Like, it doesn't have that same kind of poetic vibe to it. And right. I've always shit on bands that are like, they can't find any way to use any bit of metaphor or tongue-in-cheek delivery to lay out their gripes with our system, because it right. doesn't stand the test of time very well. Like 15 years from now, looking back, like, yeah, all of this shit will still have happened, but when your lyrics are that on the nose, if you're in a different era, this album won't hold up. And that is always problematic for me. Like, it needs to have the ability to relate to any time period or be told through some other expanded story. And he doesn't do that anywhere on this album. And that's a weak spot for me. So yeah, all in all, it's good. It's fun. It's heavy. It'll play really well live, but it definitely feels a little bit more dialed in and, you know, straightforward than some of their other stuff.
Yeah.
And like a step backwards from the last one. So for me, it's a 3.
Fair enough.
That's going to do it. We're going to play my favorite song off the album for you, Resurrection Man. The bridge on this is fucking sick. Check it out.
So that was Resurrection Man by Lamb of God off of their self-titled eighth album. Let us know what you think of the album over on the SideshowPodcast.com or on any of our social medias in the comments sections and all that jazz. Up next, we have the debut full-length from band End with Splinters from an Ever-Changing Face. It's out on Closed Casket Activities. They had one EP before that we reviewed and loved, and its name is escaping me.
From the Unforgiving Arms of God.
Thank you. And I mean, we loved it because it was just a violent outburst is really the best way to describe it as an EP. Like, it's just, it was angry and aggressive and breakdowns that smash skulls into powder. And the full-length album is not much different. And that's a great thing. It's loud. It's produced rather loud, especially compared to the two other albums we reviewed alongside it. The songs are within the 2 to 3 minute range, so they never outstay their welcome. There's a little bit more variety here. Not a lot. Like, it's always loud, but the pacing may change to something a little slower of a groove. Some may be a little more power violence-y, double bassing straightforward. They're always smashing something somewhere. And the vocals, good Lord, are these vocals scathing. Like, I don't know how frontman Brendan Murphy, who's also frontman of Counterparts, like, has a voice. I know I just talked about vocal training in the review on the last album. That's the only way he can talk in real life. Like, he's just yelling. It sounds like he's screaming his lungs out with all the heart and passion he possibly has. And it's extremely effective. This album is telling a story, and so there's a few interstitial, like, sample, like, dialogue samples in there to tell the story of a kid talking to a psychiatrist or something. And it's funny, Nick mentioned to me before I listened as something I don't like, and generally, no, I don't. However, here, they were short enough they didn't bother me, except for the fact I kind of felt we needed more of them. Like, they don't come in until a few songs into the album, and, like, I guess I got it, so it was effective enough. I felt like I expected one at the top of the album and, like, one more in there just to have a longer continuity. If anything, it had gave a little bit of a reprieve from the bludgeoning of the rest of it. But that said, like, it's either way, it's forgivable. I mean, they take up very little time. it said there's enough pacing changes in the writing. This doesn't just sound like one long breakdown or one long screaming wall of noise. It's just perfectly violent and aggressive, as reflecting the state of the world as it is.
Yeah, this is perfect. This is like, I mean, I fell in love with that EP immediately. I think I listened to it like 10 times in a row on loop when it came out, because it was so short. And like, it's, you know, it has that same delivery and caustic kind of just in your face, no fucks given, no, like, you know,
shit taken, no fucks given.
Yeah, that one. It has that like same intensity that Nails has, but for some reason, something about this makes me able to listen to it more without fatiguing. I don't know what that is. I don't know what the like slight difference is. Maybe it's like the slightly more hardcore breakdown angle versus just grit.
Yeah.
But something about this makes it easier for me to listen to on repeat. So getting a full length album from them is everything I wanted. I mean, they don't let up at all from the EP to the album. The interstitials are fine. I don't love it. Like, it definitely helps tell the story they're trying to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But I could do without that. I mean, I feel that way about pretty much every bit of spoken word storytelling, movie clip, intro, outro type thing in the history of music.
Right.
So that should come as no surprise. But thankfully, they tracked them in a way that if you really, really hated them and want to get rid of it, it's not the intros to songs, it's the outro that leads into the next song. So you could feasibly get rid of them if you wanted to.
Yeah.
The only way they could make that better would been if they were standalone tracks that I could uncheck in iTunes. But there's not that many of them, and they're not that long, that it doesn't really, you know, affect too much. While we're talking about really good drummers this episode, this is Billy Reimer of Dillinger Escape Plan on drums. Like, the dude is fucking unstoppable, and the drumming on this is real, real good.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone in this band brings exactly what they need to bring. But the drums and the vocals in particular are the energetic spine of what this band is, and it is so, so good for that.
And to go with that, I have to say the production is an impressive feat where,
yeah,
they said it's loud and noisy and extremely aggressive and heavy, yet everything is separated just enough where you could hear everything. And the vocals still remain on top, yet blended, you know, with the rest of the music. And they found a, much like a really great Power Violence production, which, let's face it, Power Violence production can be very hit or miss, but it's, they found that line and just right on it. It's impressive.
Yeah,
this is excellent.
This is a 5 for me. This is everything I wanted a full length album from them to be, and it delivers in spades.
Yeah, I can't argue with it. There's no reason for me not to give it a 5.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I'll go add that to my things to remember at the end of the year. And you will go listen to the song The Reach of Resurrection from End's full-length debut, Splinters from an Ever-Changing Face.
I'm
right, that was The Reach of Resurrection from N's latest, Splinters from an Ever-Changing Face, out on Closed Casket. Next up, we have our Black Label segment for you, which this week, this couple weeks, we are featuring Inside Out Music. This record label started in 1996. It's a German-based label that originally started putting out reissued albums from American prog acts for the European market, which is a very weird way to go about things, but I guess someone has to do it. They then partnered with SPV Music, and then eventually, after they went bankrupt, they joined on with Century Media. So that's kind of their header now. And they get distributed from Sony Music International as well. So there's like a weird branch kind of all tying together that makes them a little hard to figure out. But basically, that first sentence I said is the important part. The kind of core ethos of this label is putting out progressive music.
Yeah.
Whether that is metal, whether, like, you know, progressive means many different things to many different people. And their artist roster definitely proves that. You know, they put out what we think of prog, such as covering Caligula's Horse in the last episode, or currently they're about to be putting out a new Kansas album. Like, they kind of run the gamut on what is prog. Some of it metal, some of it kind of more classic rock, but if it fits within that header, they're interested in it, and it finds a home there. We've covered a few of their artists over the last 7, 8, 9 years that we've been doing this, but a lot of it doesn't generally overlap with what we do. We've covered Haken. We've definitely done Caligula's Horse. Carnivool is on there. Devin Townsend is part of them. That might be
The Safety Fire.
Oh, shit. Forgot about them.
Okay. I happen to be on that part of the release page where it mentioned that back from 2013.
Nice. Okay.
I don't think
we're That's weird. They're not on... I'm on their page.
Well, like, they're not an active artist. InsideOutMusic.com,
and they're not listed there.
Oh.
Because they're not current, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know if we reviewed James LaBrie. I think we talked...
Oh, we did.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. You hated every second of that. There's... What am I listening to right now? Redemption, something else you also... Personally, we're not a fan of. But other names people might know, like Pain of Salvation and Spiritual Beggars are on here. So there's a decent amount in the realm of metal, but then there's... Oh, and Dream Theater, obviously, is now on there. But then there's a lot of artists that aren't. I mean, and it's... I'm not much of a prog person, as y'all should have figured out by now. But there's some really interesting stuff on here to go digging through, because you have everything classic style progressive rock to like a much more modern, something you would be border on just being indie music, and stuff that is just instrumental but kind of chill, but also really interesting and progressive if you actively listen to it. Like, it really runs the gamut. What's interesting about them is that they still seem to function as an independent label, or at least appear that way, despite technically being under Sony Music, because Sony now owns Century Media. Right. But I don't think Century Media ever owned Inside Out. They're used for distribution, so I'm not quite sure the whole of the relationship.
It's a very weird relationship to try to sort out, and reading that Wikipedia page or their label information page will make your head spin if you try to figure out who owns who. And, you know, if anybody's holding their thumb on like, you know, what the rules are. But I agree. It doesn't seem like anybody's really dictating what they do and making them stray from their general, like, core ethos of what they want to put out.
Right. And so what's interesting about the label to me is when, as I tend to view, like, you have this metal is progressive, this rock is progressive. Like, that's, we use it as an adjective to certain styles. They use progressive as the main style of music and attach other words to that. They kind of work it backwards from how I generally think, and it's, and maybe I'm assuming others generally think, unless you're a prog nerd. And I don't mean that as an insult. I'm sorry if it came off that way. But it's just an interesting perspective, because I never really thought of it that way, of looking at progressive first and the rest of it second.
Right. Yeah, totally. That's not how we usually approach things. So for what we generally try to play something a little bit older and then an upcoming or current release when we do this split over 2 weeks. So what we're going to do this week, because we want to keep it kind of within the metal realm. We're going to play Leprous, which is a band that we have not covered on the label before. Wow. We're going to play Leprous, which is a band that we haven't covered on the podcast before, but we've definitely talked about in the comment section a few times and talked about separately, that kind of falls within that realm of Carnival, Caligula's Horse sort of sound and general vibe. And they've been on Inside Out for a good long time. So that sort of fits the progressive side of things and, you know, a band that's been with the label and put out a number of albums through them. So it seems like a good reference point while still keeping it, you know, related to what this show is and not, you know, playing something from Spock's Beard or something a little bit more like traditionally progressive. So with that, we're going to play you the song The Price from Leprous. Check it out. We'll be right back.
All right, so moving on to the last review of this week is another band we've never checked out before for some reason. And actually, some reason, Nick never heard of the band until I mentioned them, which I still find hard to believe.
I don't know. It's true, though.
The band is 16, the number 16. The album is Dream Squasher, which I totally typed wrong in my notes. I typed the Aftermath Squash Dreams. Don't know why.
Okay, sure.
So, anyway, it's out on Relapse. Where this is their fourth album for the label and eighth overall. And Relapse is why I recognize the band, it's especially from... I used to be more into Relapse when they had more things I was into. Now they seem to experiment a lot and things get a little weird, but... You know, 16 was definitely on there, kept coming up. I recognized the artwork, and I was just like, it doesn't sound like something for me. And I was wrong. It is something for me. They're listed as sludge metal. Maybe it's stonery, maybe it's sludge. I'm not quite sure where one starts and the other begins. I think if you're stoned, this is going to work either way, no matter what you call it. But either way, it's a more aggressive take on either. I think when I think sludge, it can be aggressive, but I usually think actually deeper and thicker than this is, or and maybe a little doomier, where this almost has a... I guess it's just a little more aggressive in a... I hesitate to say it, but punky attitude. Yeah, so I'm stumbling words because, I like to compare things, and I don't know who to compare them to closely. Like, maybe a more aggressive Torch... is like, or a sludgier Red Fang, like, but yeah, it's angrier than like, both.
It has like the anger of a High on Fire.
Yes,
at times with delivery, like musically of the other two that you just mentioned.
Yeah,
it splits the three together pretty well.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good way of putting it, and it runs the gamut too because some songs are a little. Sludgier. They're a little slower and stompier, where some have a more aggressive attitude to it. And it just works. It's something fun and opened me up as to why haven't I listened to this band before? Because it totally is in the wheelhouse of things we listen to.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 years ago, possibly when I first heard of them, it didn't. But it's... it's an interesting take on, well, to me, who's not, doesn't listen to a ton of either, it's an interesting take on the styles because, like you just said, it kind of splits the difference of other bands we listen to.
Yeah, like, I mean, I can tell you why I never listened to them before. It's literally because I'd never heard of them. So, I mean, that's a pretty straightforward and valid excuse. I don't know how I missed them that long. But I'm definitely interested to go back. I'm reading a couple little blurbs that the band posted on their Bandcamp page right now. Apparently, for the first time in their 29-year career, this is the first time that this singer has become their main lead singer doing cleans and the screamy vocals. I don't know what it was before that. So I don't know how that compares to previous stuff, if it was a different guy in general, or if he just didn't do cleans before, or what. So I'm curious to read more or listen more on that. And then there was a funny quip that they said a conscious effort was made to inject positivity into lyrical themes, which is funny because if you listen to this, it doesn't seem to be that way at all, really. The next sentence after that is, the best we could come up with is loving your dog so much you'd end up killing yourself if the dog dies. And the second song on the album is Me and the Dog Die Together. So, yeah. But yeah, this is fun. I understand when you say it has a little bit more of a punky vibe and delivery to it, though, like, that word...
it's not a good word.
Definitely does not tie over to... yeah. What the sound of it is, but it's a more energetic delivery than what I generally think of when I think of stoner. It has a little bit more of that Red Fang, or as you said, Torch kind of bounce to it with the stonery aggression of a High on Fire. Just kind of like mix them all together. And if you like those three bands and a few others within that subgenre, you'll probably like this. Shit, you probably know a lot more about this band than either of us do. So there's that, because they're 8 albums deep and we just found them. So we're kind of talking out our asses here on this one, but we both like it. And I can tell you now, we're both going to go listen to more.
He's right. I already did.
Yeah. So on that, I will say, if you are a fan of this band, they have 8 albums, or 7 more albums, which I need to go back and check out. If you have a recommended starting point, throw it at us in the comments. I would love to get an education. But yes, you pretty much covered the general soundscape of what they do and why we like it. And I agree with all of that. It's a 4 of an album for me. It's really, really solid. I rocked out to it for 2 weeks and thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm definitely going to go listen to more.
Yeah, I'm giving it a 4 too. And sorry I bumbled my way through that, but you know what? Shit happens.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It can be very difficult to be like, to review a band that has existed forever that we just found and doesn't sound immediately like something else that you can compare it to.
Well, also, I usually write some notes.
Yeah.
I didn't write anything this week. Which I...
Good man.
No, it's not good man. This is what happens when I don't write notes. I sound like an asshat. So I have no one to blame but myself. At any rate, that's enough about that. That's 16 with Dream Squasher, which awesome name, by the way. And some other band should steal that for a band name. Their 8th album out now on Relapse. At the end of the show, we're going to play you Harvester of Fabrication. While you're checking that out, you can go to the SideshowPodcast.com. And like I said, leave comments there, link to our social media. You can email us if you have recommendations for where to start with 16, more bands to listen to. Speaking of that, there's a lot of releases coming out in the next few weeks. Not a hell of a lot we're familiar with, which is good for exploration's sake, but it also gets a little hard to know where to start diving in. So if you have some recommendations of new stuff coming out we absolutely should check out, email us, comments, whatever, let us know. We'd love to hear from you on that. Over on the SideshowPodcast.com, as always, you can click the album arts on the right side to go to Amazon to do your shopping. It helps keep the show up and running. All you do is click, you go to Amazon, and do whatever the hell you want to do there. Buy whatever you want. It helps us out. Also, we do another podcast called Horror Scouts. As the name suggests, it is horror movie based, where we pretty much review a horror movie and talk horror things. Nick and I do that with our friend Mike, who you should all know from our end of the year episodes, talking about artwork and stuff. And also, he does our artwork. That goes out every other week, just like this show does, only on alternate weeks. So you can listen to Nick and I fresh every week.
It's like we never went away and switched our format to, you know, every 2 weeks. We just added another podcast because the whole reason we scaled back on this one was because I didn't have time. Whoops.
And then this happened. That's a little easier to watch one movie in 2 weeks.
Yeah, right. I mean, the reason we scaled this back, as I've said many times, is because I lost my ability to listen as much at work.
Yeah.
So having more time with the albums helps, but I'm not watching horror movies at work.
Right.
So
that's horrorscouts.com. You can also find it on the Apple Podcasts app and YouTube and a number of other Spotify. Is that on Spotify? Yes.
Yep.
And a number of other podcast places. That's about it for the old end of the episode crap. And for next week, we're kind of still working that out. We're going to check out the new Protest of the Hero for sure. Beyond that, we don't know. We're going to go figure that out. You're going to listen to Harvester of Fabrication by the band 16, and we'll see you next time.